This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. As football fans, we often pride ourselves on knowing everything, from which substitution can turn the game around to the quickest route home to beat the crowds. However, when it comes to discussing feelings with our friends, we might not always feel as confident. That's why we're here to equip you with the right tools so you can reach out to those who can help. If your mates are struggling, let them know that the Samaritans are free to call on 116 123. That's 116 123. They are there to listen without judgment or pressure, 24/7, 365 days of the year. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
This is the besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you a few days after some people like to call it Derby Day. Derby Day is a day when a team from your local area, fairly local to you, comes down and plays you, or you go to them and you play them, and it's always full of anticipation, fear, danger, kind of like, you know, all sorts of feelings go down in Derby Day. And Fulham came down to New Griffin Park on Monday night. And they went home very sad with their tails between their legs. B3, Fulham 2. It was a great night. And to be quite honest with you, we're going to spend this whole podcast pretty much talking about Brentford beating Fulham. I've got my chums here in the virtual joint. I'm sitting here with my pint of Guinness and I'm going to get some more beers lined up as well all the way through this podcast and talk about Brentford beating Fulham. I've got Lainey in the house. Lainey, what do you want to talk about today?
I might talk about the Fulham match on Monday night, Bill, if that's all right with you. But I've noticed that when you win your game against your local rivals, then it's like a euphoria, and it's fine. If you lose it, you're allowed to say, "Oh, you won your cup final," which we're getting, because it's an important game for both teams. But if you lose it, then you flip it, like, you know, it means more to the other team than it does to you. But I'm saying it's one of the biggest games on our calendar this year, and we won it. So I'm mighty happy. Aren't you, Bill?
I'm very, very happy indeed, Lainey. But I tell you something, it's not only about me and you, Lainey. It's about our other guests in the house as well. We've got the Cog in the house. The Cog, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks.
Is there anything that you want to talk about?
I'd like to talk about the Fulham game.
The Fulham game. I mean, why is that, Cog? Because, I mean, did anything in particular happen about the Fulham game?
Well, we just took them apart, really. It was a wonderful, wonderful evening.
That's right. Okay, well, we'll tell you something. We've got a whole podcast which we could talk about the Fulham game. So I'll come back to you a little bit later as well. We've got Tommy L in the house. Tommy, how are you?
Very well, Billy. How are you?
No, I'm all good, mate. Is there anything in particular you want to talk about in this podcast?
Yeah, mate. I thought I'd talk about our biggest ever league fixture against local rivals Fulham.
Our biggest ever? It's the biggest ever league fixture or biggest league fixture this year?
No, well, season. I think it was the biggest ever to date, wasn't it? A league fixture, anyway. Yeah,
the one at the beginning of the season didn't really count, did it?
No. Well, no one thought either team was going to be where they were at this stage of the season. So I think this qualifies definitely as the biggest league game ever against.
Definitely. And was it a pleasing day for you, Tommy Hill?
Yeah, it was all right, wasn't it? I certainly didn't leave early. Nah. I'll tell you that much. Stayed right to the very end.
And it's funny that, actually, like, just like the professional you are, just queuing me in. So leaving early, I'm going to have to ask a question. Okay, to leave or not to leave? That is the question. The question I have to ask you is that when is it a good time to leave an event early? I mean, surely there must be some justification for it. Now, this is referring to the Fulham match on Monday night. When Brentford went 3-1 up, Fulham fans decided to have a fire drill. Now, there's a difference between a fire drill and a complete and utter evacuation. Now, if a place is evacuated, there's sometimes a good reason for an evacuation. Now, I'm going to be devil's advocate here, and I say that there actually is a good reason for an evacuation. However, our buddy Rusty B does not believe there is a good reason for evacuation, especially a game the magnitude that we had on Monday night. Let's have a little listen to what Rusty B had to say about Fulham's evacuation.
I've got to say, their fans were fucking disgraced. It was embarrassing. You know, they've had a really good season. They've been playing great football, had some great results. And with 2 minutes to go, they've all fucked off. And, you know, when they scored that second goal with a minute to go, well, we saw what happened when we played QPR the other year when they drew 2-2 with us, when we were 2-0 up with, like, a minute to go. But when they scored that second goal, there was no one there to cheer.
They were silent, wasn't it? Most people didn't know it was a goal.
I've never seen a goal celebrated so little in my life. It's absolutely embarrassed. They should be ashamed of themselves. And like my mate, when they come over at the end of the game to collect their fans, my mate over there, Craig, said every fan will get a shirt because there's only 12 of them fucking left. You know, it was that embarrassing, wasn't it? Fucking embarrassing. But what a great night to be a Brentford fan.
Rusty B was not happy with the Fulham fans at all. Was he, Laney?
No, he wasn't happy. But he's produced a bit of podcast gold there. It's we were all thinking it, but no one could quite put it exactly like he did. And he hit the nail on the head. Really, it was just shocking, you know. And the people that were left in the ground, they were only there because the queue to get out was like funneling through the exit, you know. I don't think there would have been anyone in there if they played another couple more minutes, because, you know, I've never seen anything quite like it, because to be honest, because it just wasn't like, it wasn't just like there were a few empty seats, or there were empty seats, or, do you know, like when you get that bit, that look, that kind of baldy look, when just after the half time at Wembley, where, you know, the posh seats are kind of funneling their way back in after their prawn sandwiches or whatever. You do notice times where stadiums look sparse. Not even our coloured seats could disguise the fact there was no Fulham fans there. It was just bonkers. Bizarre. There was literally no one there. Like a chunk had gone. No one.
To tell you what it was. It was actually kind of almost like a throwback to the last time that we played Fulham at New Griffin Park, which was during lockdown. And they were like, there were no fans in the stadium. Maybe like the Fulham fans actually thought, actually, this is kind of how we need to watch our team at Brentford, with like no one in the stadium, because there literally was no one in there. And like I said to you, I'm going to go over to Tommy. Tommy, I'm just going to ask you, you know, what were your thoughts on that moment when they scored? Because also, like I said to you, when they scored, the weird thing about it is, I mean, like, we laugh when, you know, fans come down, and there's been some fans that come down to New Griffin Park who are worse than other fans, who don't give the support. But when they score, normally there's a roar, whenever that may be. You know, there's a roar that they score. But when they scored, it was a bit bizarre, wasn't it?
Oh, it was totally bizarre. I mean, in fairness to them, they had a long way to go, you know, to go home. So, you know, it's probably a reason for them leaving that early.
Yes.
You normally hear some noise. I mean, they didn't make any noise all night, frankly. But you normally hear some noise when the Oppos score.
No noise from the Putney boys, yeah?
No, absolutely none whatsoever, as far as I'm aware. Yeah, it was strange. I think we made more noise. I think the groan that we made, that we were all, oh, God, that's annoying. That was definitely, that murmur, where we all said the same thing, that definitely made more noise than the 12 Fulham fans left behind.
Maybe they left some sort of quiche or sponge in the arga.
Maybe. Yeah. Or they'd run out of smashed avocados, yes.
I mean... I mean, I've got to ask this question as well, because I mean, Laney was talking about sort of the social media comments and the fact that, you know, when teams lose, they start, you know, giving it, you know, oh yeah, your cup final and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, also, you know, there's the, you know, Fulhamish are chums as well, but, you know, who I spoke to before the game, and they were laughing, saying, well, you know, we're trying to work out whether or not we're going to score four or five past you today. And I was just like, you know, very calm, you know, we will see. You know, they said that they were going to we'll talk on Tuesday. They said, I've not heard from them since, and I don't think I'll probably hear from them for the next 4 months. But just coming back to this thing, I'm just wondering, okay, the fact that they lost that game in such a way, you know, the third goal was scored in such a way and so many people left, to me, that says to me that actually really hurt them, because, you know, normally somebody scores another and you stay. But the fact that they all left... They obviously thought that they're going to win that game. They obviously thought that, because, you know, if you didn't think that, then you'd be, oh, whatever, we've just lost this game. But they obviously really thought they were going to win. And when that goal went in, because it wasn't as if at that stage it was like 7-1 or 8-1. It wasn't like the Liverpool score against Man United. It was only 3-1, you know what I'm saying? And they had a chance still, you know, time to come back into the game. But they all left. And I'm just wondering, what do you think was going through their head, the cog?
I don't know whether it's a complacency thing. I mean, the message it sends out to the team, to the manager, etc., though, is disastrous, isn't it? Can you imagine that happening to Brentford when we're, like, you know, two goals down with 8 minutes injury time? The whole end just disappears. That's just embarrassing. And, you know, that's sending a really bad kind of message to the team, you know, who'd worked their socks off, to be fair, and played pretty well. To exit like that is just, that's really unforgivable, I think.
But the fans actually left well before injury time. That's the thing. I mean, if they left at injury time, you think, okay, that's fair enough. I mean, let's just hark back to, you know, the season. And this is not a case of, oh, we're better than you. But let's look at situations where we're a bit down in the dumps. Okay, we went to Aston Villa. And, like, we got battered by Aston Villa. I mean, like, we went there and they just played us off the park. And we were like, was it 4-0 down before we knew it? Okay, now... If I remember rightly, I don't remember Brentford evacuating the away end at Villa. I mean, we stayed till the very end, four goals down, got battered, and then we went back to the pub and we had a drink with the Villa fans. I mean, Laney, wasn't that right?
Yeah, I mean, there were some fans that left.
But it wasn't an evacuation.
No, it wasn't on that scale. And, you know, I remember at Newcastle away, you know, we'd 5-1 down. And, yeah, of course, people head back to the pub, but it wasn't en masse. It wasn't like it was a
call. It wasn't all 3,000 of us that were up there, no.
No, it wasn't. It was just like people drift away. And, you know, we're not going to... I think what you're saying is we're not going to be all holier than thou and saying, like, our fans never leave the game early, ever. But not anything like that. Not even Southampton away last season when we were, you know, we were getting beaten 4-1 and there was only one train back that night. And, you know, if you missed that, then you were in big trouble. You know, I guess that there was a reason that night to make sure that you were on that train and you left. That was probably the only time I've seen an above average leaving the stadium. But
it wasn't anything, you know, like. But it still, but wasn't anything like that.
No,
it wasn't anything
nothing,
like that. That's
nothing.
The whole thing.
As I said earlier, I've never seen anything like that in my life, where there was literally no away fans left inside the stadium, barring a handful. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. When Rusty said there was only 12 and they would all get a shirt each because there was only 12 left, you know, that really wasn't an exaggeration, which made it even more funny because it was true.
I mean, just harking back to you, you can go back and just say, have there been any situations where you've either you know, you've gone in and you've left early. It could be a football match or it could be an event, okay? You left early and then you may have regretted it or didn't regret it, or anybody that you know might have done that, or there's situations where you've actually stood firm. You said, I ain't going to leave, and you thought, oh my God, actually, I should have actually left that one because that was quite really bad. I mean, I'm going to hark back to it again. I mean, you know, like harking back. I mean, I know Ali Malali was laughing at me talking about 1981 last week and my Fulham memories from back in the day. But, you know, I'll still live on those memories. I thought it was wonderful, you know, in the days that we were trying to beat them and we eventually got the better out of them. And I'm still very fond of those memories. But we should move on to the noughties, as they call it. 2005, I remember going up to Bradford City with Mortgage Man and this crew. And we went up there and to Bradford City and I remember we were there in the side stand. They put us in the side stand and Brentford were 4-0 down at half time. And I mean, in those days, what, we probably used to take sort of 300 or 400 fans to an away game if you were lucky. And I have to admit, sort of quite a few characters did leave when we were 4-0 down at half time at Bradford City and went back to the pub across the road. But I decided to stand firm and I stayed in the stadium and I stayed there till the bit. I probably left like in the 89th minute and went to go and meet the characters in the pub. Well, by the time I got and met them, they were well and truly oiled. So, I mean, that's one situation that I remember where there was a bit of a fire drill, but it was those days where we were terrible. And characters decided that they were going to, you know, they're on away day and they thought, look, we could have better fun back in the pub. But I say that still, it still wasn't as bad as the Fulham evacuation. Have you got any other situations that you want to talk about? Anybody?
Leaving early, I left a party early once, and I regretted that. It was one of the early When Saturday Comes. It might have been their 10th anniversary, 5th anniversary, and I was there. Rupert came down from the Rupert's Roar, the Falkirk fanzine, and we had a really good night, and he'd introduced me to his mate who was in a band called Oasis that I'd never heard of, and he invited us back to listen to his first album, and yeah, the first album, Definitely Maybe. And we had fun, and I just thought I'd get the last train home, but apparently the party went on all night and the album kind of it got traction. It did quite well, apparently. So yeah, I regret leaving that party early.
Yeah. Tommy.
Blimey, I don't think I can top that. That's outstanding, Dave. I left the NFL early at Spurs Stadium last season because just like 85,000 people trying to get to a tube station that's absolutely miles away, I had to. But I've never left a football match early. I did leave at a festival. It was chucking it down with rain and we were planning to stay at the main stage the whole day. But we kind of were like, oh, we're really wet and fed up now. Let's go back to the tent. And we left. And then when we came back later that evening, we found out the Specials had made their return in a surprise gig. They weren't billed. So, yeah, missed the Specials' return after like 25, 30 years apart, something like that. That was just more bad timing than leaving early. But you'll say, yeah, never left a football match early. And I just don't understand people that do. Yeah.
The Cog.
Nothing to compare with those, I'm afraid. Nothing to compare with them.
So you're just airing us the Cog. You're just airing us, mate.
Yeah, that's right.
Cheers, the Cog. Right, we'll have to talk to you about it. We're going to have to review your contract, the Cog, because you're not playing the game. You're not playing the game, mate. I'll tell you something. There's a few other things as well. I mean, we've got to chuckle about as well. There's Liberal Nick, who he hasn't been on the podcast as much as he used to be back on the day due to his proximity of living literally in France.
it's almost America, isn't it?
That's right. So yeah, but we will get him on at some stage, I'm sure, because I know a lot of people do miss the Liberal Nick, and he actually went to, and actually talk about Fulham, he went to the Fulham game. But unlike the Fulham fans, you know, we actually were losing to Fulham. We were losing to Fulham and I think it went into extra time, but the Brentford fans all stayed behind except for Liberal Nick, because Liberal Nick decided to leave early. In fact, he had to leave early because he had to head back to the West Country. And was it a Tuesday night? Was it a night game? I can't remember.
No, it was a Saturday.
So I don't know why. Yeah. I don't know why he left so early. But anyway,
train timing.
Oh yeah, train timing. But anyway, so Liberal left back, and that was when Maupay scored in the last minute against Fulham and did that absolutely fantastic goal and then sort of celebration. And so I remember Liberal Nick saying he was absolutely gutted when he missed that one as well. And also, and again, it always seems to happen against Fulham. We've got my mate Paul Cassell from Sevenoaks, and we were playing Fulham and it was 1-1. and the game was going into extra time, and Paul says, "Oh, I'm going to leave because I'm going to get my train." And we're like, "Oh my God, this game's really exciting." He goes, "No, guys, I'm going to go. It's 1-1. And he left and he walked out, and then there was Hotter in the last minute. And he missed the Hotter in the last minute moment, which I think is completely unforgivable.
You know? Man, you were winning it. Oh, dear. Yeah.
You know? But the thing is, there's only one of them. There's two of them. It's him and his brother. Just two of them that left. It wasn't like the whole end as evacuated. So, you know, of course, I talked about my mate Neil, the Crystal Palace fan who walked out at the end of the game when Palace were 1-0 up a couple of weeks ago. And he was absolutely gutted about that when he heard the cheers from the Bees fans as he was walking back to Kew Bridge Station. So, but in general, like I said to you, we're just talking about the evacuation. I mean, surely, I'm just going to throw it out there. There must be a time when it is okay to evacuate, to leave early. We can't all be like, you know, like us, surely.
No.
Yeah, if you're on a ship and it's sinking, yeah, you can jump off it. Absolutely.
Maybe that's what they realised. Maybe they realised
they're on a metaphor.
Yeah, the metaphorical Fulham ship is about to get sunk.
What? It's funny you say that, because I was looking at quite a few Fulham socials afterwards, and quite a lot of Fulham fans are actually saying that was coming, and that they were quite surprised. So maybe they were just expecting it, actually. They weren't all those ones, those bullish fans that you met. Maybe they were the minority, and actually they were expecting it, and they just thought, well, let's get out of here as quickly as we can.
That did make me laugh. Someone did tweet, two German subs sunk Fulham, because there was Vitali Yanel and Sharder. So yeah, that did make me laugh.
Yeah, it's a good chuckle. But anyway, listen, we're telling you something. We're going to go away because we've all got beers and all sorts of drinks in front of us. You know, maybe cups of tea, whatever you want to drink, which is fine. It doesn't have to be alcoholic. It just have to be enjoyable. We're going to go away. We're going to have a little drink. We're going to go. We're going to come back, and then we're going to talk about. I think we'll talk about Fulham. Monday night, New Griffin Park, under the lights. Brentford 3, Fulham 2, a mass evacuation, and there's no security alarm. They just left to the moon. We could have probably gone on like this for years, but because it's completely floored us, we've got no idea. There might have been a reason for it. There actually might have been a valid reason for it. I'm trying to find out. Actually, I've put a little call out to the Fulhamish, and maybe we might hear back from them before the end of the podcast. But it was a great evening, and also, it was Brentford's celebration of International Women's Day, which is all really good as well. So, yeah, like I said to you, they had lots of things that were going down before the match. They had the Brentford Female Academy, Girls Academy, which is the ETC and development squad as well, who were on the pitch there, who did the guard of honour for the players. And I was very lucky that my daughter Bella was actually on the pitch there with her girls from the ETC, welcoming the players on. One thing she said to me, she goes, "Oh my God, Ivan Toney, he is absolutely massive. He's like a giant." And he is. And he was a giant that was giving Fulham lots of problems on the pitch as well. But I mean, that game, it was almost, I wouldn't say it was a game of two halves, but it was a game of where the first half, I mean, we went in 1-1 at half time. And even though we were probably a little bit gutted that Fulham got the goal back, if you're being a football fan, is what we tried to do. We tried to be fair. We said, to be fair, that was probably a fair result at half-time. We said at half-time, and that was coming. Fulham were coming at us, and they got in there at half-time. But in the second half, it's almost like we just turned the screw, and we just knew what to do. We allowed them to have the ball, you know, as much as, you know, as we wanted to, knowing that they'd only do certain amount with the ball. And then what we did is that we just killed them. Any time that we just attacked, we looked dangerous the whole time, and it looked like there was only one team that was going to win that game in that second half. Wasn't it, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head there. The first half was even. Yeah, we started, we went off like a train, didn't we? We should have probably had three in the back of the net within 10 minutes. But they grew into that half, and I think in the end it was just two jammy goals, weren't they? Ours was a massive deflection, and theirs was a lucky bounce off the corner of the bar and the post, and nodded in. But the second half was all about Brentford's desire. We our desire and our just will to win. You know, just that those guys, that lot, were not giving in. They realised what a monumental occasion it was. I don't know what Thomas said to them at half time, but he clearly got into them, and they came out, and Fulham didn't get a sniff second half, did they? They didn't get a sniff. They're a good side, let's be honest, and they play well, but we just didn't let them play. We bullied them from start to finish in that second half, and I think it was the most complete second half performance by Brentford that I've seen in the Premier League.
Yeah.
I thought they were absolutely outstanding.
And it's interesting you say that. I mean, one of my mates, again, Neil, the Palace fan who watched that, you know, he goes, good game, lots of attacking intent. Brentford celebrated harder than Arsenal did when they, you know, when they scored that last minute equal winner against Bournemouth as well. And he's going like, I can't believe it, they celebrated harder. You know, he's going like, Brentford's lap of honour versus Arsenal full staff pitch invasion after Bournemouth winner. Who has celebrated hard? He thought that we did, you know. But then he said also, he goes, he loves it when players understand the importance of these games. And he said, no celebration, please, I'm not Richard Keys. But he's saying, like, you know, the fact that he could tell when he watched that game how important it was to the players. And I went back to him to explain to him how the club actually got Peter Gillam to sit down with all the players and explain to them how important matches like Fulham and QPR are for these players who, you know, might have come from abroad or come from sort of kind of lower leagues who have got no idea about the kind of the history of Brentford. You know, I mean, he obviously probably told about my 1981 stories as well, like, you know what I'm saying, and how important it was for us to beat Fulham back in 1981, and the goal that was scored in the 70th minute by O'Sullivan, whatever his name was, like, you know, that really upset me. But 1981, but anyway, that for me, I think that's a really big part of kind of where the club is. And, you know, one of the things I was a bit worried about is as you go to a higher level, we lose that. But you could see on Monday night, there was absolutely no love lost for Fulham, and they absolutely loved the fact that we beat them, didn't they, the Cog?
Yeah, I mean, it was like Tom said, that was an absolutely fantastic performance. You could see what it meant to the players. And I mean, what one of the things that struck me was the fitness of our team as well, because I think it, you know, Tom's right, it is about resilience and not giving up and everything, but this is quite a feature of our game now. You know, we get stronger as the game goes on. Thomas, as usual, made some brilliant subs, but actually the seven or eight players who weren't subs just kept going at a level that Fulham just couldn't match, and that was true of Palace as well. You know, we kind of could have thrown in the towel there. It was just, that was one of those games where you thought we could play for months and we're not going to score, but we hung in there and we got the result in the end. And, you know, we just pounded Fulham in that second half, and there were some absolutely superb performances as well. I thought Ivan was as good as I've seen him, actually, showing a whole range of skills that, you know, it, even for him, were kind of pretty remarkable, really. And I thought Ethan Pinnock, yet again, was an absolute rock at the back. But everyone played well. It was superb.
They did, indeed. So something, what we're going to do is that we're going to go and harp our minds back to Monday night, go back to the terraces, the stands, the pubs. Let's listen to what the fans had to say in the stands and the pubs straight after the game.
Seven on the seven off the pitch, which is good, because most buggered off home early and missed their consolation goal. Great, great performance, mate. First 20 minutes, superb, fast. They got back into the game, you know, they're decent on the ball. For the second half, we just went straight back to control. Some really, really good performance out there today. Damsgaard was obviously the first time we've seen him playing at that level, which is a real plus. But the regulars, the Ricos, the Pinnocks, the Tonys, the Bryans, where'd you stop? That was an awesome performance, mate.
Gotta say, all round though, tremendous performance again from everyone. No bad performances. Damsgaard, bit of a surprise to see him starting, but he was everywhere. For me, he was my man of the match.
It was one of the best, most complete Brentford performances I've seen for decades. I thought we totally dominated the game, all but 20 minutes in the first half, but really, really good performance. All the players up for it. They all know what they did. Brilliant win against a decent Fulham side, got to be said.
That is some of the best ball movement I've ever seen and some of the best striking I've ever seen. Great time, great win for the Brentford club.
A shout out to Dan Scott. He was all over the pitch today. He was brilliant, chasing them down, pushing. We were great, deserved the win. Yeah, easy life.
When is this going to end? We're in dreamland.
I'm gobsmacked at the intensity and the enjoyment, you know, and the celebration of everything. It's beautiful.
I'm loving it, loving it, loving it. We're loving it like that.
I think them scoring a goal really helped us, because at our time it was just, we've just got to just swarm them, close them down, not give them any oxygen to breathe and play their football. And we were just relentless the second half. Damsgaard, Jensen, all of our players, just fucking 10 out of 10, unbelievable. They just didn't know what to do. They couldn't cope with us, could they? You know. And I think Fulham, technically wise, are a really good side. But the second half, they didn't have the ball. They didn't, you know, it was a West London derby, a big derby. And I think they bottled it second half. We just wanted to win. And they just, I think they just couldn't cope with our energy, enthusiasm and our determination as a team. They couldn't cope with us. And we deserve to beat them. 3-2 flatters them. 3-1, 4-1 was what it should have been.
I thought we were brilliant. Home stands, home ends were good. Loud, noisy, created an atmosphere. Brilliant stuff.
But this was my first Brentford Fulham game. 30 years watching Brentford and seen us hammer QPR a few years ago. That was easy. But that night, 3-2 wasn't a fair reflection. That game was easy. We never even had to get out of fourth gear. Job done. Easy.
There you go. The fans in the pubs and the stands straight after the game. And you could just hear the joy in the stadium there straight after the match. The joy in the globe after the match. People were on the tables and everything. You know, singing and dancing and just enjoying themselves. And it makes me laugh. You said Fulham are saying rent free and all this kind of stuff. But it's just... We're obviously just very different sets of fans. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we love our football. We've been in the doldrums for years. We enjoy it when we win. We enjoy it when we beat our rivals. And we basically just take the piss, you know. That's just kind of what we do as a fanzine, as a fan base. That's kind of what we do. And other people don't kind of seem to be able to sort of kind of take it. You've got to be able to take it when you win and when you lose. When we lost up at Fulham, we took it. You know, we had to take it. Me and Laney, I remember we were walking out there through the park. We were walking past all those Fulham fans. All the Fulham fans kind of, oh, you're Billy the Bee, aren't you? Oh, yeah. What's it like losing your cup final? I'm like, you know, it's early in the season. We'll have to see how it goes. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, they're like, yeah. And, you know, and it's different because, you know, you realise that for years we've gone to Fulham and we've absolutely taken the piss out. Literally, we have just like, it's embarrassing what we've done. You know, 7,000 fans in the Putney End, like winning 4-1. You know what I'm saying? And just going absolutely gaga. You know what I'm saying? And Fulham fans must be thinking, this is so embarrassing. Every time we play Brentford, they do us. And when they get like one iota of a victory, they beat us once in the league. I think, was it at our place? I can't remember. I think it might have been. Maybe it's their place. They beat us once out of all the times we played them, and they were so happy. They got that one victory, and then obviously the playoff final, they got that victory and they were like, yeah. But the fact is that what was brilliant about that is we were sitting in the pub in the Globe, so we didn't have to walk past them down bloody Wembley Way. Well, they took the piss out of us, you know what I'm saying? So it was brilliant. It's the best time for them to ever beat us in a massive game. And it hasn't happened since. But we accept the fact that if you lose, you've got to suck it up a bit because you've given it. Now, we've given it loads. And then they've given it a little bit back to us, and then now we've won again, and we've given it back to them, and they can't handle it, can they, Laney?
No, but we all know that it's a game of like fine margins. You have to take your advantages where you get it, you know. And in an even game where you get like 1 or 2% either way, that's going to determine the outcome of a match. Then if you can sort of dig deeper than them, because the derby or the rivalry inspires you in some way, then you know you've got to use that to your advantage. And if Fulham are going to be aloof and say the game, you know, Brentford doesn't matter to them, the real derby's Chelsea, you know, if that's your outlook, then you're kind of like you're missing out on a vital ingredient that could actually inspire you. You know, and you know, Rico Henry, that run back, but he sprinted probably 100 yards, well, I mean, yeah, 50 yards at least, to regain late in the game.
Exactly, lost possession. Exactly when in the game was that, though, Laney?
It was late. It was like 85, maybe. It was in time added on.
When all the Fulham fans had left.
But that showed what you know, I'm not saying he wouldn't have done that against Leicester or he wouldn't have done that against Bournemouth, but I'm sure that, you know, that played into it. There was a mindset, it was a mentality. They knew the players knew what the game meant, and you know, it was like almost like life on the line stuff. And that run back, he was as fast then as I've ever been in my life. And that was after playing a game for, you know, an hour and a half plus, you know. So it was incredible. And I think that's just encapsulated, as I said, just what the game meant. And, you know, if people want to take the piss out of us, look, our cup final, whatever they want to call it. But we draw inspiration and we draw energy wherever we can get it. And we won.
We yeah. Listen, 100%. We won that game, and again, I think this is what it comes back to. Again, the conversation we had in the podcast before. You know, the fact that Fulham and Brentford are at sort of similar levels, does it mean that the meaning of the game has kind of has dropped to a certain extent because the jeopardy is a lot less? Obviously, for the players out there, that's not the case. Obviously, for the Fulham fans out there, I mean, there must be something going on because obviously they were so upset that they lost that game, they walked out. So it's almost like maybe it was even bigger for them because the fact is that they are back where they believe that they belonged, and then they got beaten by a team who they thought was lesser than them. You know what I'm saying? So maybe for them, it's almost like it's bigger for them now than it is for us.
I think you've touched on a really good point, and I think the COG did so earlier as well. It's almost like they turn their back on their club. They're happy. They're happy to kind of like, you know, take the plaudits like we are. I mean, I thought Fulham were a very impressive team. They're probably the best team that we played in the, you know, recently. We can all take pleasure in the fact that, you know, we're kind of like the ugly ducklings of the league. And we're putting some big names out of, they're putting their noses out of joint. So there's a lot to be, lots to take pride from. But you can't sort of turn your back on your club like that. It's almost like we're behind you when you're winning, but when you're losing, we'll just fuck off. You know, it's not the done thing, is it really? You know, you've got not really.
No. It's exactly that, Laney. It's entitlement, actually, with the Fulham fans. They had years, what, they had a 10-year stretch in the Premier League all those years ago. So there's an entire generation of them that have known nothing but Fulham in the Premier League, you know. And so they lack that humility and they lack that ability to kind of look at other clubs as for what they are and accept, oh, well, yeah, they're Tim Pot Brentford, they've got their Legoland Stadium, all that nonsense that they spout. It's such an easy narrative for any of them to spout over social media. But the fact is, they actually believe that they should be at the Premier League level. Now, right now, they're playing quite well and they're probably worthy of their place in the league. But yeah, they can't have it both ways. Like in the Championship, they didn't seem to care, and you know, they didn't seem to care about our rivalry then, and now they're making out that they don't care about our rivalry now. They do care about our rivalry now because they all left because they were so pissed off.
Listen, let's talk about go back to the game. Let's talk about a couple of players, okay? First of all, Kevin Schade. Now Schade came from Germany. He didn't cost 10p because he cost a little bit more because he rated quite highly. And Schade has been brought in, you know, and, you know, I think, you know, we'll probably look at him to grow into the position where if Ivan Toney probably ever left, which is a chance, high chance that he will do the way that he's playing at the moment now, anyone's going to be a fool not to be looking at Ivan Toney and paying us the money that we so deserve for finding him back in the day and paying 50 pence for him. You know what I'm saying? But Kevin Schade. You know, he's obviously come into the camp. He's 2 months in the camp where he's learning the Brentford ways and he's learning to, you know, to the Brentford patterns of play and the style and everything like that. And he's coming on as a bit of a super sub and causing a few problems. And every week that he comes on, he's looking more and more impressive. And he had a good little run in this game, didn't he, the Cog?
Yeah, I thought he was made a real difference when he came on. He's electric, you know. He's quick. He looks as though he's as quick as Rico, which is seriously fast. And you know, when he turned Robinson for what turned out to be the assist for Jensen, Robinson himself is quick, and he made him look really, really pedestrian. There was another nice little bit of skill that he did over the other side of the pitch as well, and it ended up not coming to anything. But I like the fact that he's trying things. You know, we need people in this team who can beat their man, and he certainly looks capable of doing that. I mean, I think he, you know, he'll be pushing for a start. I think there might be a case for switching him and Wiese around, bringing Wiese on as a sub. You know, he's not going to, Thomas isn't going to be able to leave him out for much longer, I think. He looks, he's got so much about him.
Laney.
Yeah, well, you actually nicked what I was going to say there, the Cog. You're absolutely spot on. I was going to say that we needed to see that from Sharda. You know, because he's clearly one that's literally now toe-to-toe with Wiese in the starting lineup. You know, if we could see a couple of goals out of him soon, there's a lot different about them individually as players, clearly, and you know the physicality and what they bring to the team, but in terms of you know, danger, and I see that Sharda now is kind of like he's starting to deliver. He knows how we play, and he's had that time to immerse himself in just kind of like how we operate. And Wiese needs to up his game, I'd say. You know, they're both competing for the same place. You know, and Bumo and Tony, they pick themselves, but I think Sharda started to shine.
Definitely Sharda is shining, a shining light in the Bees camp. And then we've also got another player who we've been waiting for him. I think it's been a bit tough for him because he came with such high expectations off the back of the Euros, had a brilliant Euros, you know, got to the semi-final, you know, scored a free kick against England. He was seen as the person who replaced Eriksen in the Danish side.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Opening up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
So obviously when Eriksen left and went elsewhere and then he was signed up for us, we basically expect him to be the new Eriksen. And it didn't quite happen. Brentford didn't throw him in the deep end. They just basically used him as a super sub, brought him on for 5 minutes there, 10 minutes there. We were a little bit like, is he really the player that he thought he is? But to be fair, Brentford just stuck with him. And then on Monday night, they started him and there was a little bit like, okay, what's going on here? But Damsgaard had a mighty fine game, didn't he, Laney?
Yeah, he did. You know, as we're seeing, you know, him evolve, him getting stronger and him getting used to, you know, Brentford again, another player that needs to kind of like work out what we're about. He's starting to kind of prove his quality and his class. You know, it was inevitable that we give him enough minutes and we give him enough time, he's gonna, you know, he's gonna show what he's all about. He's still a very different player to Christian Eriksen, from what I can see so far. You know, Eriksen was someone you just gave the ball to and he'd produce magic. He'd either produce a pass or he'd go, you know, he'd see something or he'd pass or he'd cross with the quality that no one else could do. You know, Man United are, you know, they're absolutely, you know, they are so happy that they were the ones that got that player. But Damsgaard, he's someone that's only going to get better, I think, and I think he's going to prove to be an incredible bit of business for us. It may not be this year still, and it may be next year, but yeah, it was a big call to start him. And you know, I think he's earned that right over the you know, the previous three or four matches. And yeah, I'm hoping that he can just build on that and stay fit and get stronger.
I mean, this Fulham game, if anything, was a big statement. We've, as you know, I don't like using the amount of games that we're unbeaten, because I think that it probably doesn't sound as grandiose as if you use the amount of months, because obviously there's a month out for the World Cup. So I'd rather say that we're unbeaten since October, which I think sounds really good. Like, you know what I'm saying, from March to October, we're unbeaten in the Premier League. This is obviously a big thing for Brentford. I mean, we laughed about the European tour, but all of a sudden newspapers are writing about European tours for Brentford, which kind of makes it a little bit more real. I've always been a bit nervous about the European tour, but I'd love to go on it. But the question I'm going to ask you is that this Fulham game, we talk about the West London Mini League and we joke about that as well, but all of a sudden this kind of crystallised that West London Mini League a little bit, because Fulham were kind of always above us in that. And yes, we did have a game in hand, time over time here and time there, and we just thought, you know, are we going to catch it up? But we've beaten them, and if I remember rightly, I think we've got two games in hand over Fulham now, so we can actually go to the top of the West London Mini League, which doesn't probably mean anything to Liverpool fans or Man United fans or Chelsea fans, but it means quite a lot to us. And also, if you speak to Chelsea fans as well, they're a little bit resigned to the fact that they're going to finish third in the West London Mini League, which I think is quite a bizarre situation that we're in. But just coming back to this game where we've beaten Fulham, which kind of basically kind of puts up a few notches, what's your main takeaway about this, about Brentford, and about everything about this season that you've got from this game, the cog?
Well, I mean, apart from it being a really, really strong performance, one thing that did strike me during the game is, and this is new for us, we've now got a series of players who can strike a dead ball threateningly. Brian hit the post, Ivan hit the post. Talking about Damsgaard as well, you know, remember his goal against England, you know, he is a decent set piece taker. So, because I can't remember anyone since like Barbe really who could strike a decent free kick. Suddenly we've got three of them in the side who are a real threat from, you know, anywhere around the box really. So it's perhaps a bit of a minor point, but I was thinking on Monday night, actually we're in a very different place as far as that part of the game is concerned.
Definitely. I mean, and Tom,
I think sort of thinking wider, to go back to your question in terms of where we are as a club sort of now and what it means for us in terms of this result, I think at the start of the season, all I wanted to do was finish above Fulham. I didn't really care about Chelsea. I didn't really care about anything else. I would like to have finished above 13th, just because that's just progression. But I really just wanted to finish above Fulham. The fact that we're now going to have to probably finish 7th or 8th to finish above Fulham is actually quite remarkable, and it says quite a lot about them as well. But it either says a lot about the league and maybe how mediocre or less than mediocre Chelsea have been, okay, and other teams, or it just says,
or
that
how
actually
good we are.
Well, that's exactly what I was about to say, Billy. You jumped in there. As I was getting there, it's just how good we are, actually. Like the guy, Dan, the guy who stands next to me on the West Stand, he just said, I can't believe how good these players are. Like, and that's the point. It's like we've all watched some pretty terrible players. We've all had some bright sparks along the way, and we've all got our favourite players over the years. But this squad as a whole is ridiculously strong, and you look around here and we're there on merit, and this is the thing. And like, bizarre, you say it's bizarre, and it is bizarre because we're so used to being little old Brentford, oh, we're just having this fun old ride in the Premier League, actually. But we're there on merit, and our players are really good, our squad are really good, and our head coach is outstanding at what he does.
But it's interesting, I mean, you sort of said we're going to have to probably finish 7th or 6th to finish above Fulham in the West London Mini League. Now, according to 538, which we used every now and again when we want to just feel kind of good about ourselves and to see where we're going, project ourselves, 538 actually predicts Brentford finishing in 8th position at the end of the season on 57 points. One place behind Newcastle, we're on sixth on 64 points. So there's quite a big gap between us and Newcastle. Then Brighton Newcastle on seventh, Brighton on sixth with 64 points. Then Tottenham, Liverpool, Man United, Man City, with Arsenal finishing top of the league on 85 points. 1 point above Man City is what they're predicting at the moment, the stats people. However, us being in eighth place, they predict Chelsea to be second in the West London Mini League on 54 points. So that's a big 3 points behind us is the prediction at the moment now. And Fulham to finish in 10th place in 53 points, which is a big 5 points behind us, which is a big gap, you know, if you're talking about in that position now. So at the moment now, they're actually feeling the bees, the statisticians. Now, we know that this is all about stats and things could change the season. It's about form and who comes in and injuries and people getting banned and all this kind of stuff. But however, for me, that's quite a nice look, isn't it, the cog?
Yeah, it definitely is. It's remarkable where we've got to. Just going back to the point that Tom made about the quality of the players, I totally agree with that. And what's really interesting, I think, is if you look at the bulk of the 11 who started the other day, almost all of them were with us in the Championship for, you know, at least a year. And so the improvement that those players have made is testament to how hard they're working, but it's the quality of the coaching must be absolutely sensational at Brentford. You know, I think a lot's been made of our recruitment over the years, quite rightly, but what we're seeing, you know, that the difference that's being made at the moment is not by an influx of new players, it's by the players we've got improving. And improving so rapidly, it's incredible. We can now hold our own against any side in the country, you know. And this is an incredibly strong league, and we look absolutely at home. We seem to have got every opponent worked out. We've got players we can trust, who are consistent, who understand and can adapt to different formations. They know how to make a result. And now and again, the wheels will come off. You know, Villa was appalling, Newcastle even worse. But those occasions are few and far between. We've only lost 4 games out of 20-odd games this season, which is unthinkable 2 years ago when we, scraped through. Well, we didn't scrape through. We won a superb and well-deserved playoff final. But we were third in the Championship, and look where we are now. We're seriously challenging for Europe, and not fazed by anyone. It's incredible.
No, not at all. Listen, just to talk about the besotted global player of the match for the game. This game, the player of the match was Damsgaard, of course. Magnificent game he had. So Damsgaard, number one player of the match. We had Ivan Toney, number two player of the match, and Ethan Pinnock was number 3. So like I said to you, those are going to be totted up, and at the end of the season we'll find out who the besotted global player of the season will be. Thanks to the Tasmanian Bee, Dave Genford, for doing that every single week. Top bloke he is out there. Gets up very early in the morning to watch the Bees games over in Tasmania. Like all the other international Bees, we're giving you a big shout, all you international Bees out there. I've actually just got a little message from Steve Starnecki in the Washington Bee, who's just said that he's just managed to convince his wife to make him come over to the UK, and he's going to come for the Villa game and come for the Chelsea game and also come for the Forest game as well. So like I said, welcome all you international Bees who have found Brentford, and rather than supporting Man United and Chelsea and Liverpool and all that lot, you've come to support a team who are smaller but have got a vibe. Anyway, listen, we're going to come back to JB, because JB's got a vibe and JB's got some facts and he's got a lot of funk. Let's find out what JB has got in his facts and funk trunk today.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall back again. This is the 26th season where we've met Fulham in the league. Prior to this season, there's never been a 3-2 result to either side, and there's never been a season where the home and away results have been the mirror image of each other. 2 new records now established. We've now achieved 38 points from this 38-game season, with 14 left to play. That milestone reached 9 games earlier than last season. As Ivan Toney took and scored his 22nd penalty for us, it took our current run of successful game-time penalties to 32 in League Cup and playoffs. The other 10 have come from side Benrahma 4, 3 for Brian Amembo, 2 for Marcus Force, and 1 for Josh De Silva, all equally with a 100% record for us. The last unsuccessful penalty was Ollie Watkins' effort against Millwall in October 2019. So looking back at that and the previous 31, we had scored 17, but missed 15, owning a 53% success rate. On the last podcast, I mentioned about us being slow starters in games. Well, Ethan Pinnock amended that fact when he scored in the 6th minute against Fulham, the earliest goal we scored in the Premier League. It was our fastest since Ollie Watkins netted the owning goal of the game in the 4th minute of the behind-closed-door championship game against Preston at Griffin Park in July 2020, 111 league games ago.
So there you go, JB with his facts and his funk. I tell you something, we need to close this chat on Fulham. You know, we need closure. I mean, I know they need closure, but we need closure. This podcast will be going on for about 15 hours if we're not careful. So just last thought on Fulham. The Cog.
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful evening. It was, I'll never forget that game. It was a real joy to be there.
Tom.
Yeah, everything that's good about football and everything that's good about Brentford Football Club right now, taking on a local rival with a load of history there in a completely sort of slight new environment, you know, the Premier League and all the rest of it, and we just took them apart in the second half. I mean, that second half performance for me was right up there with the very best I've ever seen from any Brentford team. I just thought they were outstanding, and long may it continue.
Lainey.
It underlines that nothing has been lost with the intensity of the match. The atmosphere, the players, they get it. Even though it's in the top flight and there was nothing really at stake, the players and the game meant everything to everyone that was there. And it was a proud night to be a Brentford fan.
And for me, this game actually it really solved one question. Why have a fire drill when you can have an evacuation? Anyway, we're going to have a drink and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about Everton. Big game Saturday for the Bees because they want to maintain their unbeaten run. Big game for Everton because they are deep in the relegation zone and they need some points to get out. And also, and this is the thing about Everton, because we're a little bit disappointed with Everton. Because they obviously don't understand. They don't know the plan. They're not sticking to the plan. The plan is to get Leeds relegated. Okay, so listen, Everton, Southampton, Nottingham Forest, West Ham. You need to stick to the plan. And, you know, Nottingham Forest were doing all right for a while. But now they're starting to fluff it as well. And, like, you know, Leeds are doing really badly. But everybody else around them, they don't seem to be helping the situation. Just coming back to Everton. Okay, so Everton... They were under a Frank Lampard. We're going to go over to Connor in a minute in Toffee Blues podcast as well. And he's going to give us a little bit of a rundown. But they were under Frank Lampard, who we've always had reservations about. We know Frank, you know, probably a nice guy. He was at Derby County. He had the crown jewels at Derby County. He didn't get them promoted there. And he had his limitations. He went to Chelsea and he got rumbled there. But, you know, Everton took him on board. I think they had a very good early... Well, they had a good start because he played us and beat us in the cup. And they thought, yes, this is it. It's all turned around. But naturally, all things kind of just snowballed and it just went horribly wrong for them. And he got the tin tack. He got sacked. And Everton, they thought, we need to do something to save our Premier League position. They've got in Sean Dyche, who obviously had a bit of a new manager bounce, which we don't believe in, but he had it in his first match and they did all right. But since then, they've not been looking particularly great, have they, the Cog?
No, they haven't. I mean, I think actually that Dyche is a really good appointment. It's the first decent decision that Everton have made in a while, I think. I think Lampard was... not up to it. I'm not sure what he achieved to get that kind of big job. But my, you know, I assume that when Dyche took over, they, you know, not so much a new manager bounce, but actually they've got someone who really knows what he's doing and is an incredible track record at Burnley. So I think they will still turn it around, but you know, you look at their squad and it's thin. You know that they don't seem to have proper cover in a series of positions. So you know, they're not going to haul themselves totally clear of the drop. I think they'll still be nervous with a couple of games to go. But you have to make the point that their home advantage is quite significant. I think, you know, when Goodison is rocking, it's proper rocking, you know, so they're going to need to really make the most of their home games. And I have to admit, I do fear for us a little bit on Saturday, because certainly the last time we went up there, it was deafening, and you know, it was almost kind of feverish, really, the support they had that day.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, at the bottom of the Premier League, again, going back to 538, they have Bournemouth finishing bottom on 33 points. But the fact is, it's more the point that they've got 64% chance of relegation is Bournemouth. And then Southampton, second bottom, with 63% chance of relegation. Everton, third bottom, with 58% chance of relegation. Nottingham Forest, fourth bottom, with 41% chance of relegation. Then Leeds United, fifth bottom, with 28%. So there's a bit of a gap between Forest and Leeds. And then West Ham are 14%. So West Ham are sort of, at the moment, they're thinking kind of out of it. So what this is dependent on is one of these teams coming out with a result which is out of the blue over the next few weeks. So somebody's going to come out with a result out of the blue, which will actually get them points that the statisticians don't think that they should have got. So this is, I think, where we've probably got to be a little bit careful, because obviously I think they probably expect us to get 3 points from this match. And if Everton do, it's going to just change things all around, which in a strange way, which will put Leeds in a bit of trouble. But we don't want to be the people that sacrifice our points to actually kind of be drawing Leeds into it. I mean, Laney, Everton for you, I mean, technically they shouldn't be in this position, but I mean, the way that the club's been run and the stupid money that they spent, I mean, it's just, it's almost inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they're there for a reason. You know, it's mismanagement, it's bad purchases, it's the lack of kind of strategy and vision and long-term vision. You're right, you know, growing up, they were huge, you know. They were always kind of like, yeah, they weren't glamorous, I never thought, but they were always, you know, there, and they were always big, and they always had, you know, the ability to get the best players. Going up there, you know, the cog's right. You know, their biggest asset is really their atmosphere, and we saw that last year. You know, I wasn't really necessarily scared about the players, although they had some, you know, they had better players probably then than they've got now. You know, we've obviously got the Morpay factor. You know, he scored against us for Brighton. I hope he doesn't, you know, play a part in you know, the big decisions of the game. But you know what, you know, okay, yeah, yes, the atmosphere, yes, that they're going to try and be on the front foot, and they're actually going to try and win the game rather than box clever and defend for their lives. But like they would do against Man City or Liverpool, but they are gonna. Their defence is shaky. We will always create chances, no matter who we play against, and we are gonna create chances against them. So I agree with the cog. We need to be wary, but I'm not overly worried. Yeah, the run's gonna end at some stage, of course, anyway. But I'm not sure it's this weekend.
Everton. Okay, let's look at where they're strong and where they're not so strong. They're strong at stealing the ball from the opposition, but where they're weak, keeping possession of the ball, finishing, scoring chances, defending set pieces, aerial duels. They're very weak at avoiding individual errors, and also very weak at defending counter-attacks. They like long balls, attempt crosses often. They're aggressive. They've got the consistent first 11, and their opponents play aggressively against them. Balls in our court here, you know, you look at that, you sort of think we can actually we could actually do the business.
Yeah, absolutely. They're there for the taking, aren't they, though? I mean, they're not very good. Dyche is a good appointment, and to echo other sentiments on the pod already, that their atmosphere is very much something that works in their favour when the fans are there and up for it. But that's the point. The fans have got to be up for it, and they've got to get behind it. They've got to have something to get behind. And right now, they don't have anything. I mean, you reeled off all those things that they're good at or they're bad at. I mean, they're bad at pretty much everything, really, aren't they? And we're pretty good at most stuff as well. So, that said, they'll probably win 1-0 now. But I'm confident about Saturday. I think they're there for the taking. I think that there's no quality in their squad. They can't score goals. They can't keep goals out. They can't hold on to the ball. They might fluke a goal and then the fans get behind them and it gets a bit raucous and it gets a bit difficult. But yeah, we've just got to go up, take our chances, and I think that's 3 points in the bag.
So, listen, I mean, we are going up to Everton. I'm just going around the table here and I'm going to actually tell you something, what we're going to do. I mean, we're talking about we need to take the game to them. We're going to go to Everton. We're going to go to Connor from the Toffee Blues podcast. He's going to give us the lowdown on Everton.
My name is Connor Williams. I'm a presenter for the Toffee Blues and Everton YouTube channel. Cover a load of things, including match reviews, match previews, news, transfers, all the good stuff that you'd expect, live streams occasionally. Everton fan, so absolutely enjoy the pain of being one, and forever an optimist. Thought we'd do better than we did last season, this season. Struggled. Still think under the new manager we'll be better off. So forever an optimist. Cannot 100% say we'll stay up, but also cannot 100% say that I think we'll get relegated. It's that type of glass half full mentality. So far I think the season's been pretty poor. I think Frank Lampard, I didn't rate him as a manager when we got him. I think he was lucky last year. And I think the problems were there early doors, and I think he's carried on with those problems now up until we should have sacked him when Bournemouth beat us twice in 1 week, putting 7 goals past us. Should have sacked him then, had the World Cup break. Instead, we hung on too long, which is a problem Everton do. Everyone thinks we sack managers willy-nilly. Problem is we don't. We just hire really bad ones and then keep them too long. So yeah, a really bad season for us. I think pre and post World Cup, there was literally no difference in Frank Lampard's team. The writing was on the wall before it. It was real incompetence and negligence for the board to keep him in charge during that. And then another like month afterwards as well, the damage was done. We were dropping down the table. I think because most fans liked Frank Lampard still, and still, for whatever reason, thought he was a good enough manager, the board kept him on. I personally and a couple of other fans knew he was never going to be any good and should have got rid of him. I also think the league's a little bit tougher. Everyone's had a good January from what I can see. Some of the teams coming up have done really well, and some of them not so well. Fulham are doing really well. Some of the Premier League stalwarts of late, like Southampton, who've been up in the top flight now for must be about 8 years now, are struggling. I think they're showing what happens when you don't fund the squad properly. But it's still competitive and they look like they're not done yet. Bournemouth don't look like they're done yet. And the teams around us have changed managers and had a good January. So the rivalry and the quality of the division is really tough. This is probably one of the closest Premier League tables I've seen in years. It's unfortunate that my team are where they are, and I'm interested in it because as a neutral this would be a great league to watch at the minute. Up to date, I don't know, Everton's form probably a 6. I think it's got better under Dyche, which is worth pointing out. Lampard, I think, was ill-equipped. I don't think he was ready for such a big and stressful job. He should have stayed in the Championship, learning his trade a little bit more. Dyche, I'm happy with him. He seems to already bring a fight to Everton, bring a tenacity. He wants a working, hard-working team. I think once we've got fit players, aka Calvert-Lewin, who is absolutely essential to us, we will see a better Everton. Those crosses that we're getting into the box will have somebody a little bit better than Moipai on the end of them. I think, unfortunately, for Dyche, if he'd been brought in when he should have, which is just before the World Cup break, I do believe we wouldn't have been in this mess. But like I said, the board were negligent and now he's got a real job on his hands. And for that, I feel a bit sorry for him. It was a poison chalice for anyone. I could see why Marcelo Bielsa supposedly turned it down and wanted to manage the under-23s. But yeah, I think it's a real tough one. In terms of the squad, it's really tough. We didn't make any signings in January, and that, for me, I think will be potentially what kills us. Not so much anywhere else. I think we've got a good back four and a good keeper. Our midfield is okay. It's aging a bit. Idrissa Gueye isn't what we thought he was going to be again. I think everybody remembers him from 3 years ago. He's really beyond the pace. He's cost us a couple of games as well. He's just not up for it for me. But the biggest one is not signing a striker. Dominic Calvert-Lewin struggled for the last 2 years now with injuries, which is a big shame for him on a personal level. He's a really great player as well, so it really does suck that he's not been able to play. We should have got a striker. If you've lost your main striker, last year we had Richarlison, who had 11 goals. We sold him in the summer. Calvert-Lewin's still injured. Where are those 11 goals coming from, potentially, to keep us up? Neil Moipai looks like he couldn't hit a barn door. So it's a real struggle for us. I think the lack of getting a forward, even though we were promised it by our owner, is really, again, negligence. It's the current thread of Everton, and the theme running through this club is the negligence by the powers that be. I think in terms of what we have got that might be a struggle for Brentford, I think, to be honest, since Sean Dyche has come in, one of our better players has been Dwight McNeil. He really struggled under Frank Lampard. I think Frank Lampard was playing him out on the right as an inverted winger, which wasn't not what you should be doing with Dwight McNeil. Sean Dyche has come in, said, you'll stay out on the left. You will do the defensive side of the game as well as the attacking. And he's put in some really decent balls. I think he's been our best player since Dyche took over. Obviously rekindling that Burnley sort of link they had. And you can see that now. You can see it. He is certainly getting better. I don't know if he'll score, but he could get a couple of assists. Problem is, he's putting in great balls, but like I've already alluded to, nobody to finish them. Really, really disappointing. I think in terms of who could do better, I don't think your podcast is long enough for me to run that line down. Idrissa Gueye, I think he could be a lot better. I think he could be a lot better. I think Mikalenko, the left-back, has struggled as well. Neil Moipai, got to be doing better. Really, really poor striker. Really poor. Best game of the season so far would have to be the 1-0 win Goodison over Arsenal, league leaders. We did really well there. Dyche's first game, and you could already tell what he'd been working hard on in that week. I know there were jokes about him making Everton players do the bleep test, but it worked. They ran Arsenal off the pitch. It was a really good, typical sort of what you'd associate with Dyche in terms of aggressive, hard-working. Not anti-football, which is what he gets dubbed as, because we had created better chances than Arsenal. I think is what he gets labelled as by the media is a very unfair critique. Worst game of the season so far to counter that, I mean, post Dyche's appointment would be the Arsenal away game. Absolutely dreadful. But before that, the Brighton game, any of the two Bournemouth games, really, really poor games for us. But like I said, I'm a glass half full type of guy. I can't 100% say that last year I didn't think we were relegated at this time last year. There was something that made me carry on hope. There's that again this year. I can't 100% say I'm confident we'll stay up, but I'm not 100% worried that we'll go down. I think there's still plenty of games to play. It's tough. We've got Brentford, who were undefeated in, I can't remember how many, it might be more than 10 games. So that's a tough game. And then we've got a couple of other tough games like Chelsea. But then we also play like the likes of Bournemouth and I think Leeds. So the teams around us. And if you want to stay up, you need to be beating the teams around you. So it's in our hands, so to speak. And then there are some tougher games, which is a shame. But it's the Premier League. You don't get easy games. But yeah, Brentford, absolutely good memories. Good memories about last season. I think it was the sort of game that kept us up last season, which was phenomenal, obviously, for us. I don't think we've got an awful record either against Brentford. I think it could be better, don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's awful. I think Brentford have beat us twice, we beat them once, and I think we drew earlier this season, which wasn't a bad result at all. I'll take a draw. Earlier on in the season, if I remember rightly, Brentford created a lot more chances than us. We held on really well. Could have held on a little bit longer to get that win. The equaliser came in the 84th minute, but to be fair, if we'd won the game, it'd been a steal for us. Drawing the game was a bit of a steal when you look at the chances Brentford created. I think they did really, really well, and we did well to hang him there. Which player? I mean, Brentford, I'm not surprised about that. It gives a good game. They've got lots of good players. Ivan Toney is the obvious one, clearly, and he's just a fantastic striker. He is very much a striker I'd love at Everton. If somebody said which striker, free checkbook, any price you want, he'd be one I'd go after. But you know, there's a number of good players there. There's Onyeka, Keane Lewis-Potter, who we were after in the summer. I think he's a fantastic player. Rico Henry, I think, is a decent fullback. I think we're going to have to be careful of those. And I think as well, one that can't be underrated is Ben Mee. I think he's a solid and has been a solid centre-back for the last 4 or 5 years. I think he did really well alongside Michael Keane, and everyone praised Michael Keane, who then came to us for a bit of big money. Then it was Tarkowski, and everybody was like, oh, Tarkowski's the one. I think it's Ben Mee because he's been the constant in that side. So it was a really great signing for Brentford. And I think he will really be up for this, just for a bit of fun. I think the game, honestly, I don't know, it's a bit tough. You'd hope for a win because it's at home for us. But like I said, I think Brentford are undefeated in over 10 games. I can't remember the exact stat, but I saw it the other day on Sky Sports Twitter, which is really impressive. So with that in mind, I'd happily take a draw. But obviously where we are, the position we're in, we need to be winning all the games at home because that's where our best form is. Score prediction, I think it'll probably be, I hope 2-1 to Everton, but I can see it being 1-1. I think it's going to be a really tough, contested game. Really hard-working players as well. But I've been Connor Williams for the Toffee Blues. Hope you enjoy listening. Hope I haven't been too biased. And thank you again, Billy, for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure.
So there you go, Connor from the Toffee Blues podcast. So listen, we're going to go around the table and we're going to just find out a score prediction from you chaps from the Everton game. The Cog.
I think it might be a bit closer than the others think. I'm going to go 2-1 Bees, but I think it's going to be tight and I think there are going to be some scares in the game.
Tom.
No, I think we're playing with so much confidence and so much ability and so many threats coming off the bench. Easy 3-0 win.
The Laney.
Oh, 3-0, blimey. I think Tom really hit the nail on the head a little bit earlier. Dyche gives them the best opportunity they can have of escaping. He'll set them up right. I just think we've got more quality than even we care to kind of like acknowledge sometimes. I'm going 2-1 Brentford.
Oh, and I'm going to go 2-0 to the mighty bees. And hopefully my...
That's a clean sweep, isn't it? We're all saying Breeze win.
That's right. Hopefully my horse will come in one day with me 2-0 win as well. Tell you something, just coming back, because like I said to you, the question has been in this podcast, we've talked about Fulham, we've talked about Everton, we've talked about wins, we've talked about joy, but we've also talked about fire drills.
Bates.
Yes. Talk about... it's a different matter. He's best by far. But we've also talked about... evacuations and fire drills, and Fulhamish have come back to us, and I asked them the question, please tell me, I said to him, please tell me you stay to the end, and Fulhamish, Sammy from Fulhamish said, I left halfway through stoppage time, arrest me. And I'm just like, so I think it goes something up. Now listen, you know, as I said to you, there's always a good reason sometimes for people to leave early, and sometimes we can't say you have to stay to the end. So I said, okay. He said, but I live in Guildford and I had a train to catch. So there was his reason for leaving early, which, is that a valid reason, lads? Is that a valid reason?
No, not in the slightest. You can get a train to Guildford from Cuckoo Bridge really easily, like every 15 minutes.
Okay, so I asked him the question, would you have left if you were winning 2-1? And he said no. So, you know, he goes, or if Brentford were winning 2-1? And he said no. But he goes, at 3-1, the game was done, so he left. So is that a good enough reason to leave at 3-1 when you're down at that stage?
Is it fuck?
Okay, his excuse is like, every team's fans leave early when 2+ goes down. I personally don't see the big deal. Would have loved to clap the players off. I'm not getting home 30 to 40 minutes later for the privilege. Now, it's not true that every team's fans, some of them do, as we said, but not every team's fans leave when it's 2 goals down. So maybe this is kind of like, different fans have got different kind of ways of thinking about it. We've talked about this loads, but like I said to you, we thought as the podcast finished, we've got the view from one of the... Yes? Yeah.
I might have to leave.
Because you leave, actually. Tell you why.
Yeah, I've got a train to something or other. Whatever suits my narrative.
That's right. Well, you're what's it?
I'm off as well, I'm afraid. Sorry.
Tom, are you off? Nice, you're off as well?
Yeah, mate.
I've got a Victoria Sponge to finish. Sorry.
You're 4-0 down in the argument, so you're gonna go now as well. Is that right?
Yeah. Bill, you need to do
Tell you something, we all need to do one, because we've decided that we spent far too long on this and there's far too much entertainment happening. Things that
there might be stuff happening in a minute, but I'm just gonna bail out.
No. There's a lot better podcasts than there are out there, so we thought that we better leave early because we can't handle
See you later.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Don't forget to subscribe at all good podcast channels. Write us a review as well. Don't forget, don't leave early. Whatever you do, don't leave early. Also, don't forget to go to Besotted Global if you want to. Besotted.com/global. Don't forget to buy us a beer. That's very important. Besotted.com.
Oh, I'm back for that.
So Lady's back for the beer as well. All the other Tom's back for the beer and the Cog's back for the beer as well, actually. You can leave now as well. You know, you can leave with the Fulham fans. But like I said to you, my name's Billy Grant and I'm in the house here as well. And Laney, he's gone. But are you still there, Laney?
No.
Laney's not there as well. Is the Cog, are you still there?
Yeah, I can hear you, Bill.
Cog's still there as well. Tom, are you still there?
Yeah, just getting the Victoria Sponge out of the oven, mate.
He's still there as well. And I'm Billy Grant here. I've really enjoyed talking about Fulham. I've really talked about evacuations. I've really talked about fire drills. I've really started to talk about Everton. I've enjoyed talking about everything, because it's been a really great day. We won the West London Derby. We're top of the West London Mini League, almost like we're all over the place. As we say, come on, UBs. Right, let's get out of here. We've been in here far too long, actually. You know, let's go. Evacuate the place.
Billy has left the building. Brentford FC, come on, Brentford,
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly teaming up with Free for Mental Health Awareness Week this year. We understand that the journey as a supporter isn't always smooth sailing, but rest assured you're not alone. There's a vast network of fellow fans who share your passion and may be experiencing similar challenges. Honesty is key in any relationship. If your friend asks you how you are feeling, tell them honestly. If you're going through a difficult time, let them know. Open them up about how you are feeling can really make a difference. After all, they are your mates for a reason. Let's all take a moment to talk more than football.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18+, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.